last month, advocates for New York's prison population wrote to the governor urging him to do more to ensure that incarcerated New Yorkers are getting vaccinated for COVID-19. As the rate of vaccinations currently lags behind the general population, and vaccine hesitancy rates appear to be above the general population as well. To explain the issue, we're joined by Andre Ward, a co-founder of the COVID Justice Coalition and associate vice president of the David Rothenberg Center for Public Policy at the Fortune Society, which works to ensure incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people are contributing members of society. Welcome to the show, Andre.
Thank you so much for having me, David. Really appreciate it.
So throughout the COVID-19 vaccine rollout in New York, the jail and prison population has not been prioritized, despite them living in a congregate setting with higher risk for transmission. Instead, inmates have become eligible for shots at the same time as their peers outside of the correction system. So as we speak, on Thursday, June 3rd, what do we know about the percent of the state's prison population that has gotten vaccinated? And do we know anything about the incarcerated New Yorkers who haven't gotten immunized? For example, are there any certain demographic traits that they share?
One of the things that's become very challenging is the idea of accessing really hard data on how many people are actually vaccinated within the DOCS correctional services. And that's been hugely problematic. And one of the reasons why the letter was written so that we can get some transparency, obviously, could exist, and that people can know exactly how much progress is being made relative to people receiving vaccines. But, I mean, we know in the United States, you know, there's been higher vaccination numbers overall for people that are incarcerated. For example, more than 80% of incarcerated people in North Dakota and about 73% of people in California and Kansas have received at least one vaccine dose. Those numbers aren't as clear in New York State. Hence the reason why, David, we wrote to the governor as a collective body and to ensure that we had transparency around numbers to see how much progress is being made.
Your coalition does cite some numbers that the State Department of Corrections has highlighted from their own inquiries. But what do those things tell you, and how recent are those? Because it's my understanding that they're a couple weeks old at this point, based on the letter that was sent.
Those numbers are a bit old. I mean, as a result, 2 weeks. And, you know, things are obviously changing each week. And to have real-time data, I think, is what is really important to us, because 2 weeks ago, I'm sure numbers are probably different now than they were then. And this is what we'd like to access. And we'd like to have a continuing monitoring of that so that people are dealt with humanely that are incarcerated and able to access the same resources and support with vaccinations as people are in society.
So as of, I believe, May 13th, the Department of Corrections reported that approximately 25% of the state's prison population had received at least one dose of the vaccine, and they had surveyed the entire prison population and found that about 45% of individuals said they were willing to accept the vaccine when it was offered to them. First off, do you accept those numbers on face value? Do you believe the department when they advance those numbers?
Well, I certainly would not think that docs would fudge those numbers necessarily, but it's really alarming, David, that only 25% of New York State docs incarcerated population has actually received only one dose at that time, and that over 45% are interested in taking that. So that's the real concern. I'm not suggesting or asserting that, again, docs is fudging numbers, but just the sheer fact that only 25% of receiving one dose raises real concerns, David.
I want to talk about the kind of outreach that is being done in prisons and outside of prisons to ensure that people are willing to get vaccinated. But first, I'm curious whether you're surprised at all by that 45% number, that number of incarcerated New Yorkers who say they are willing to get vaccinated. Does that number make sense to you? Because it is below what we're seeing in terms of attitudes outside of prisons.
Yeah, and I think there's a real concern that people incarcerated have for medical support within the prisons. I mean, we know that those who are incarcerated are mostly Black and brown people. And the relationship between Black and brown people in the medical community historically within the communities of Black and brown people, and by extension, those who now are in prisons and jails, in their engagement with medical staff and personnel is one of distrust. So the number is not surprising that only 45% would be interested. I think it's reflective of more of an attitude and a perception and a distrust that has its root in history and the idea of, you know, not trusting people.
In recent weeks, we've seen Governor Cuomo go on a public relations blitz to promote the COVID-19 vaccine, including offering incentives such as lottery tickets and free college. What outreach, if any, that you're aware of, has been done to try to get incarcerated New Yorkers to get vaccinated?
I think that, you know, there are many service providers that are in New York City, particularly organizations like Fortune, Osborne, many others, right, who are really interested in seeing that people incarcerated and detained have access to the vaccination, but equally important, are educated around it. I know because of the restrictions around people accessing the prisons in particular has prevented that kind of education from happening. Yet organizations are out here and they're interested in offering that education. I know that there's a program called PACE that's within DOCS prisons. And this organization, if that's what is still so-called, offers education around HIV and AIDS. And I think an organization like that, that works to offer health education around HIV and AIDS, can offer similar education around vaccines and what that means and its impact. But there are many organizations outside that are willing and able, obviously, to enter into the prisons, if so allowed to educate people around the importance of taking the vaccine.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the effort to increase vaccinations in prisons. And our guest is Andre Ward, a co-founder of the COVID Justice Coalition. So is it simply the case in New York more broadly outside of New York City that these institutions aren't being allowed to get into facilities to make the case, or have they just not had the resources to do it, or is it just some other reason that there hasn't been something, some sort of mass persuasion campaign throughout the state's prison population?
Of that, I'm not really certain, David, but I know there's a strong appeal from coalitions like the COVID Justice Coalition that's comprised of several different organizations who serve as leaders and collaborators in the COVID Justice Coalition. The Fortune Society, you know, we started it, but it is in partnership and in collaboration with all strong organizations who are interested in doing that work. So it's a function, I think, of just DOCS recognizing the need to allow organizations and others to enter into the prisons to offer education to people. So it's not like there aren't people interested. I think it's DOCS just perception of how that would look in terms of people coming into prison to teach, the precautions around making sure that COVID-19 is not brought into the prisons. And so I think it's a combination of some of those things.
The governor, as part of his public relations campaign, has been doing some events with religious leaders that are targeting communities of color, largely Black New Yorkers. Do you think that religious institutions could or should play a role in some of this outreach to New York's prison populations where, like you said, they are disproportionately people of color?
Yeah, and I wouldn't so much as say as they should, to be prescriptive, mm-hmm. but I think they could, David, play a real role, right, in appealing to DOCS and working in collaboration with different organizations to build up a campaign to appeal to DOCS to allow that education to come in. Remember, David, many of the clergy and many of the folk from the religious communities have parishioners or people that attend the church who have loved ones that are incarcerated, especially in Black and brown communities. So I think there's a real interest that the faith communities can have in making sure that people are educated in prison around the vaccines.
So it's my understanding that you spent time in prison. So I'm curious whether that has shaped your own decision about getting vaccinated for COVID-19. Did you end up getting vaccinated? And if so, what went into your calculus?
Yeah, so I was served 16 years of my life in prison, David. I've been home around 13 years or so now. I have been vaccinated. I received both vaccines, my wife, my mom. So my family has been vaccinated. But I do remember, in terms of my incarceration, what it felt like to engage medical personnel within corrections. And there was a certain fear and hesitancy and strong reluctancy to engage the medical staff because of just this whole notion of the history of medical staff and just the medical community with the Black community and brown communities. So I even had a kind of like fear to and a strong apprehension to even go to medical services. And having witnessed several of the men that were incarcerated being mistreated, right, while trying to access medical services. So as a person who has an incarcerated experience, if I were incarcerated myself, I probably would be outside of the 45% of those who have agreed to take the vaccine because of just the sheer fear and apprehension that I would have because of the history of the medical staff and just the medical community in general engaging Black and brown communities.
And when you talk about that history, there's always this sort of discussion where there's a return to highlighting real major traumas like the testing of the Tuskegee Institute. But then there's also just the day-to-day racism that's borne out in our healthcare system where we see, for example, Black women who are pregnant maybe aren't believed by their doctors and they have much higher maternal mortality rates. So when you talk about the history, what do you think is really front and foremost on people's mind, people of color? Is it that past really egregious stuff like the Tuskegee Institute, or is it that more day-to-day and insidious racism in the medical system?
I think it's a combination of both, David. Not only just the Tuskegee Institute, when you think about the father of gynecology in Western America, Marion Sims, whose statue was recently removed, I think, from Central Park, who practiced on Black women in really horrible ways as it relates to gynecology, yet he's the father of gynecology in the Western Hemisphere. And when you think about other kind of things, and I think Harriet Washington's book, Medical Apartheid, you read about the kind of horrific practices that Black people in particular have gone through as it relates to engaging the medical community. And then you take that together with the more common practices of people who are from communities of color, who may access public assistance, may receive Medicaid, and the substandard kind of medicines that they receive to address their issues. All of that feeds into a certain kind of thinking that causes people a strong apprehension. And all this teeters on like experimentation, right? And so that, I think, fosters and really develops a psychology within Black and brown people to be distrustful of the medical community. So racism is certainly at the root of all of that, David.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest has been Andre Ward, a co-founder of the COVID Justice Coalition and associate vice president of the David Rothenberg Center for Public Policy at the Fortune Society. Thanks so much for making the time, Andre.
Thank you so much, David, for this opportunity, and we really appreciate it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.